Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network, the New Books and Art channel. My name is Kirsten Ellsworth, and today I am speaking with Catherine Suslov, author of Foucault on Painting, published by the University of Minnesota Press in 2017. Catherine, we would like to hear a little bit about you and what got you interested in this project.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm a professor of art history, visual art, and theory at the University of British Columbia up in Vancouver. But I taught at the University of California for 24 years. And I'm the recent author of this book on Foucault. I became interested in Foucault really since I was in graduate school. I've been reading his work because his philosophy is so, I feel, important for the times we live in. But I also became particularly interested in Foucault on painting as a result of an invitation to give a paper on Foucault in the visual arts at a conference in Santa Cruz. And I just got deeper and deeper into the topic and realized I should be publishing a book on it because there was no book on it that existed.
One of the great appeals of Catherine's book, for those who are listening and love Foucault, is that she has provided us something that we've not had before. This analysis of Foucault's writings on painting in particular. And I'm wondering what we should make of the fact, as you explain in the book, that Foucault compared himself to a painter.
He compared himself to a painter and said that a painter is transformed by his painting. And in comparing himself to a painter, he was saying, as a philosopher, he was like a painter. He was transformed by his own philosophy. And I feel that he wanted to understand, what does it mean for a painter to be transformed by his painting? And what could that help him understand about how he did philosophy? I think he was looking for a transformational experience in his own philosophical writings and thinking. And I think that he understood that there had been a long-standing comparison between painting and poetry, and to a lesser extent also between painting and philosophy. And he wanted to understand, maybe by looking at the painting side of things, he could understand more about the philosophy side of things. So I think that's where that understanding of a self-identification with a painter comes from.
With that said, how do you bring into the conversation Foucault's archaeological approach or method with respect to all these different disciplines, etc., that interested him?
Have explored Foucault on archaeology. He wrote a book called The Archaeology of Knowledge that attempted to explain his method, because his historical method, which is the one he was attempting to explain at the time in the late 60s, was so controversial, he felt he needed to defend himself by explaining his method, so he called it an archaeology of knowledge. When he first wrote about painting, he was also interested in this archaeology of knowledge, which was before he theorized it in this later book. I would just say that it's a way of approaching history that doesn't think of history on the surface of things as moving chronologically through periods of time, but rather as understanding history as going down into the depths of things, relating to how events, how occurrences, even how material artifacts emerge through different discourses, as he called them, or different ways of writing about things at the same time. So he sought to understand the different discourses that were operative, say, in modernity, and how to go through a certain moment in modernity to understand the different discourses about in philosophy or in painting or in literature, for example, in order to get at an understanding of a historical situation or a historical event. So he sought to, let's say, invent a new method for history writing.
As the scholar investigating Foucault painting and this approach, how do you assess the method that he has ultimately, or he ultimately arrived upon?
That's a great question. I think he used painting when he was first thinking about that method and using that method extensively in his book called The Order of Things, where he has the first chapter devoted to a very famous painting by Velázquez called Las Meninas, or The Maids in Waiting. He used painting as an introduction to this method because it allowed him to see an image in front of his eyes, in this case, a very large image, a very large painting from the 17th century. And then he could analyze it by going into the image, into the symbolism that he found in the image, in the painting, into the literally into the composition through passages of light and dark, through use of perspective. And he saw that as a form of archaeology. I think he made an analogy with the archaeology of knowledge in that way. And painting maybe gave him a clear example or medium in which to demonstrate this method or to use this method. So I think it was very successful because that's his most famous essay on painting or chapter on painting. I think it was successful. I think that he himself became dissatisfied or impatient with that method after he finished explaining it many times. And I think that he turned to other ways of thinking about painting later in his career and his writings. He didn't only think of painting as in an archaeological sense later on, but I do think that he began with it that way.
As he maybe became interested in changing things with his approach, in what directions did he go? I know that in the book you have a lot of interesting information about his interest in Manet and Magritte. How do those interests work into the story here?
Okay, so he actually wrote his various essays and chapters on painting and a book on Magritte on painting in a chronological order. So he began with the 17th century, moved to Manet in the 19th century. He moved to Magritte early to mid 20th century. And then he wrote an essay on his own contemporary, Gérard Fromanger. So I think once he'd written The Order of Things and realized how significant painting was to a way of thinking about philosophy, language, and history, he decided to approach key moments in the history of art. Now, I have to be clear, that's the history of European art for sure. That was the history of art that he knew. But he decided to insert his thinking into these key periods or moments. So he thought to move chronologically. The first was Manet, 19th century, since he'd just looked at a 17th century artist, Velázquez. So when he talks about Manet, he's more interested in a certain, let's say, characteristic of painting, which is color, and the use of light and shadow and color in painting as a way of understanding how to read painting and see what's lost in the shadows, see what's lying underneath, see what might be concealed by color and by shadow and light. Not just what's revealed, but what's concealed, so that he could understand what's lying in the depths, so to speak. So in his essay on Manet, that's what he was interested in, color, light, and shadow. Then when he moved to Magritte, his interest moved to word and image paintings, where, as we're familiar with the word and image paintings of Magritte, such as Ceci n'est pas une pipe, this is not a pipe, which is in Lacma, with writing on the painting surface together with an image. So he was interested then in language and painting as directional ways of reading a painting, and how language and words fit together with visual signs and symbols and images. And then finally, he was interested in Fromanger. That interest was really directed towards the issue of light and projection in painting, especially how photography influences painting in the modern contemporary period. So he really addressed painting from a lot of different directions and found ways to think about his own philosophy in different ways.
Do you think that the kind of radical breaks that Manet and Magritte offered, as we look back and construct this history of Western European art, do you think that Foucault chose those artists because they were revolutionary in a sense?
Yes, I think that's a very good way of putting it. I mean, these are very major artists. Manet, a major artist who a number of critics have said was really the first modern artist, the one who paved the way for early 20th century abstraction, and who also was a painter of modern life in the ways that earlier painters weren't. Yes, so Manet is significant and revolutionary in that regard, and Magritte and his surrealist paintings of word and image, those are very revolutionary when he began working in that manner in the late 1920s. And he continued that right up to his death in 64, I believe. And I also think that he chose Fromanger because Fromanger himself, his own contemporary, considered himself a radical revolutionary painter. I don't think that history has decided that he was a radical revolutionary painter the way they have that decided that Magritte and Manet were. For Foucault, that was important, absolutely.
It is interesting that he brought Fromanger into the picture, so to speak. And when reading the book, this is the one name that probably a lot of us don't know. I wondered if Foucault then classified himself as a revolutionary.
Good question again. I'm hesitant to say that he did because he never, if I recall correctly, said, "I am a revolutionary." And as you know, there were a number of people in the mid to late 60s in France who were calling themselves revolutionaries. But he was certainly sympathetic to them. And even though he wasn't in France in 68 when there was the big uprisings and revolutionary fervor reached its peak in Paris, he was in Tunis at the time. But at that time in Tunis, he was supporting the so-called revolutionary students who were also involved in trying to reform the university and prisons in Tunis. So I don't know if he's a self-styled revolutionary because he didn't want to identify himself completely with Marxism at the time, and most of the revolutionaries did. But I think he certainly was sympathetic to them.
It's fascinating, these different lives he led in one way. And I'm wondering if he ever wanted to expand beyond analysis of painting. In other words, you mentioned photography. Was he interested in sculpture, printmaking? Were there other media and maybe why painting in particular?
I think, in fact, in terms of the visual arts, his interest had been from a very young age, mainly in painting. I do believe that in the 70s, he became interested in photography because photography had such a major influence on painting. And he could look back and see that, especially with the artists called the narrative figurationists, which is what the movement in France that Gérard Fromanger was associated with. So it gave him a chance to look into photography. And then he did write an essay on a photographer, an American photographer named Wayne Michaels, which was written after his essay on Fromanger. So I feel that he might have continued an interest in photography, but he died, you know, suddenly and too soon to be able to pursue that interest. The essay on Dwayne Michaels, the photographer, is among his last essays. So in terms of other arts, besides the visual arts, I think his other major interest in the arts was in music and in contemporary, let's call say, modern music. He's written on Boulos, and he was very interested in avant-garde music in the 60s and 70s.
Perhaps we should back up to maybe a biographical question. With all that you're explaining, what was Foucault's own educational background, and even did he practice any of these arts himself?
As far as I know, he did not. He was the son of a very well-respected and well-known doctor. He attended the most elite schools in France and Paris as an undergraduate and graduate student. His training was originally in psychology, and that was in some sense related to his father being a doctor, and his father evidently was trying to insist that his son also become a physician. And I think Foucault tried to find an alternative to that by moving over into psychology rather than into medicine. But in the end, he was very dissatisfied with psychology and found it a field that was not compatible to his interests and his investments. So he moved into philosophy and started studying philosophy, and in the end understood himself as a philosopher, even though I'd say a lot of other people in France did not necessarily consider him as a classical philosopher. But his training was very mixed. It was between psychology mainly and philosophy. And I think that gave him a very unique and a position in terms of disciplines, because to have two strong trainings in France at this time was not that usual. Usually you stuck with a discipline, but he moved across so many disciplines, and his interest really was modern thought as a whole, or modern culture as a whole. So I think that does have in part to do with his biography.
Was there any time in his life during which he took on a protege or sought to teach?
Good question. He had an appointment, his academic appointment in France, the major one that he had for the longest, which was cut short by his death, early death, was at the Collège de France. And the Collège de France, you don't have individual students. You lecture to the public. You're committed to a topic, a new topic, every year. And you have to lecture to a public. So your lectures are advertised to everyone, but also are attended by many, many graduate students from all over Paris, and usually from different disciplines. And especially since his appointment at the Collège de France was in the history of thought, I think that he attracted students from a lot of different disciplines. He wasn't appointed in a traditional discipline such as literature or history or philosophy. So he never had, I would say, he had very few students. He didn't have PhD students working with him the way one works with PhD students today as a professor in a university. But that's the system of the Collège de France. That's the way the setup is. It's a very privileged position because basically you have to lecture on a new topic of your research every year, and you're not responsible to students other than giving them the most advanced lectures that you can make.
It seems an effective position for Foucault in terms of merging these different interests, reaching different disciplines, different students. If you look back on all of the writings that he produced that speak to art and painting, is there one that stands out to you as the one you like the most, and why?
That's a hard question, since I've just spent so many years looking at all of them. And I think that Foucault, Ed, because I think that Foucault is, for me and for many people, constantly fascinating, constantly yielding new insights and new proposals and solutions for problems to anybody who approaches him, even semi-seriously, but certainly seriously. So his writings on painting are varied, as I say. They pertain to the Western tradition, the European tradition. In some sense, I wish there had been at least one essay or some writing on painting that was outside of the European cultural tradition. I think it would have been interesting to understand Foucault on another culture. But I also think that he felt maybe inadequate, if one could say that Foucault would ever feel inadequate, to cover another culture, cultural frame in terms of painting. I love the essay on Las Meninas, and I do believe that it's his best writing on painting, and it was in his most... It was in the book that got him his reputation as a great thinker and a worldwide figure, celebrity almost in later years. And in that essay, you can see the seeds of, first of all, his later thinking about subjects and subjectivity and power. And you can also see his intense training in the history of art. I mean, he didn't approach anything that he undertook in a lightweight manner. If he was going to do art history, he really did art history. He was thorough. He read every piece of bibliographical literature on the topic, talked to people about it before he committed pen to paper. On painting, that's what he did. So, and this essay on Las Meninas really shows that. And I think that in the end, that's why he decided he could include it in a book. It was basically on language, because the book, The Order of Things, is a study of language. But he, I think, was persuaded by his seriousness of the approach he found for Las Meninas to put it as the first chapter of that book. So it's my favorite one, I guess I would say that.
The painting, maybe, if you would give us some insight, just as a last part on this Velázquez topic, what do you think drew him to Las Meninas specifically? Because it's such a well-known and intriguing painting.
That's true. Foucault loved challenges, so the fact that he chose a canonical painting, you know, one of, let's say, the top 10 canonical paintings in the history of European art, was not by accident. It was a challenge to him. The second thing was, it was a Spanish painting, and he did discuss Spanish literature in some of the following chapters in that book. Third thing was, according to his partner, Daniel Defer, with whom I spoke in France, and who others have interviewed since then, Foucault was just absolutely stunned by that painting when he went to look at the Prado Museum in Madrid before he wrote that essay, he had been to Madrid and he had seen that painting and it made a great impression on him. And it's a truly impressive painting. It's enormous. So its monumentality, its size, sheer size also, I think, attracted him. The fact that it was in the 17th century was another key point for his argument in the book on language and the modern age, which is what The Order of Things is about. So the 17th century was a hinge moment, a transition moment between earlier Renaissance thinking and culture and later movement into modernity. He could see things in the 17th century that he felt couldn't see as clearly in other centuries. So Las Meninas, 1656, perfect position in the middle of the 17th century for that. Well, there's a lot of other reasons too. I mean, one is that there was a big fashion for Spanish painting emerging in France at the time. So I think that might have influenced him. And the virtuosity of Velázquez in that painting in terms of his use of perspective and symbolism and the situation of his self-portrait in the painting also attracted Foucault, because here is the painter painting himself. And we began this interview with talking about why does Foucault identify with a painter? And there is a painter right there in that major essay on the painting of Las Meninas.
An illuminating answer that I really think helps us understand a large part of your project, which is the transformative and the complex and how they come together with Foucault's writing on painting. Maybe if you could describe briefly your method of research. You mentioned that you spoke with his partner. That's fascinating. And a little bit about your own approach.
In many ways, my approach is affected by Foucault, and it was before I took on this project that was focused on him. That is, I work in an interdisciplinary manner, and I have a deep investment in the literature on art, the writing on art that takes place from the Renaissance to the present. And much of that writing is by artists, but a lot of it's also by theorists and philosophers. So I've always been interested in that, and I wanted to address Foucault's investment in painting via a method that allowed me to look deeply into his resources and his interests, that is, into the literature and art, the theory on art that he knew, into writings by artists that he knew, into ideas about history and the ways that one wrote history, according to him, in his time, into the idea that painting could be like philosophy. I was also interested in that aspect of his thought, and so was able to address the philosophical context of his work. So overall, it allowed me to do research into all those different areas, and I've always done that, or tried to do it, and in my own work. And so this was a wonderful moment when I could do that easily, because Foucault's ostentatiously called for it, you know, in all of his thinking about his method and the way he thought about painting. So there was that. And also I did consult, you know, the literature in four languages on Foucault, because there's a lot of writing on him in four languages. It hasn't been translated into English. So that was key for me, that I was able to do that and wanted to do it. So there is a Foucault for France, and there's a Foucault for the United States, and there's a Foucault for Great Britain. And they don't always come out as by the interpreters who work on Foucault as sounding like the same person, or certainly as sounding like the same thinker. And I wanted to be able to cross over all those different approaches and to come up with a real understanding of how Foucault himself looked at painting. And I had to read all the literature about his philosophy from all those different contexts. I didn't find much in the archives at the time, because all of the, most of the archival material on Foucault and painting had not yet been deposited in the archives. It is now there, and that I found last summer when I was in France at the Bibliothèque Nationale. I was able to read a lot of Foucault's notes that I had not been able to read before, earlier when I was writing the book. So I actually have an afterthoughts or epilogue that's I'm hoping to write about Foucault and painting now based on his manuscripts, which are available, but which have not yet been published. My method otherwise is comparative and historical, and it involves deep reading of texts, as I said, and also of the paintings that he addressed. I'm trying to bring it all together is basically what I'm saying.
The book does bring it all together, and I already heard your next project, I think, alluded to, but with the tour de force that you've completed for the current book, what do you have planned for next project or projects?
Well, I have a lot of things that aren't related to Foucault. I did edit a volume of essays that came out in 2016 called Foucault on the Arts and Letters, which is a series of essays by different scholars on Foucault's approach to art forms, including music, and I already mentioned that, but also dance and literature as well. And I have an essay in that volume as well. I have now a lot of research on the manuscripts on painting that are found in the Bibliothèque Nationale, and I'm hoping to write my views as an art historian of these manuscripts, because much of Foucault, writing on Foucault in recent years especially, has been by philosophers. And philosophers don't look at things in art history the same way art historians do. They're not historians usually, and they're not versed in aesthetics of painting, for example, the same way that an art historian might be. So I'm going to try to publish something on these manuscripts and Foucault's investment in art history, which I can see much more clearly now that I've seen those manuscripts in the last summer. I guess I could give an example of that, which is there's a very thick manuscript for a book on color and color theory in the history of art, which is a major area in art theory, starting with the Renaissance period in Europe, but a notoriously difficult one, notoriously difficult. Having to do, of course, with science of perception and cognitive sciences, how people see and know and express color relations and its effects on the human brain and the human psyche. And Foucault was interested in color for these reasons, and so I'm interested in that manuscript especially. Again, a challenge.
Good, right? And hearing the description, I, as an art historian, and I'm guessing there's some art historians listening, I just feel determined that we get to read that, your treatment of that manuscript, because as you say, even just the subject of color alone, to know Foucault's views and continue to know more would be really important, I think.
I think so too, because again, color is a crossover field between psychology and philosophy and art theory. And I think to understand how he approached it and how he was thinking about writing about it would be really important. I agree.
Well, it's been a really enlightening conversation today, and your book is such an important contribution to the field and the many fields in which Foucault played, I guess we could say. I would just like to thank you for your time today and hope to have you back when you have another treatise for us concerning Foucault.
Okay, Kirsten, I really appreciate being here and talking to you, and thanks so much for your provocative questions, and I appreciate your interest and your audience's interest. Thank you.
Thank you.